But we got to remember that it's not about getting a lot of clicks. It's about getting a lot of customers. That's actually something I was taught by Brad Fallon. He taught me that.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here from superfastbusiness.com. Today we are joined by a good buddy of mine from the USA, Justin Brooke. How are you, Justin?
I'm good, man. Fired up.
We just caught up recently, and it's always fun having a chat behind the scenes. It's one of these interesting things where in the online world, some of the best relationships you have, the people who you actually end up meeting face-to-face, and we've bumped into each other a few times now, but certainly known of each other for years and years.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember you with the hoodie and the affiliate pounce thing.
Yeah, and I remember you way back, you were flipping sites, I think you were, and then
You've
had a few different iterations, as I have done, and it tends to be the way. But the interesting thing is it's a long game, and both of us have been certainly paying attention to one topic, and that's what we'll be talking about today, and that is all about traffic and conversions, because these elements are essential for any online business. It's always going to be important. That's something you specialize. You run a website called imscalable.com. Tell me about what you have been up to lately.
So, yeah, I mean, traffic is kind of the thing that changed my life, you know, literally like the thing that took me from a job to a business and successful business. So it's been a key focus of mine. And, you know, right now we have an ad agency, or have had an ad agency for the last couple of years, and we've been blessed with some really, really good clients. And the reason I started selling traffic as an agency is I realized the internet's booming, and the thing everybody needs on the internet, whether you're an app, a blog, a website, whatever, you need traffic.
I noticed someone was talking about the next revolution after SEO will be ASO.
Yep, App Store Optimization. Yeah.
How big do you think that's going to be?
I think it's going to be huge. And I think I almost wonder if the actual words behind SEO will start to take more meaning, because for so many years, SEO has stood for how to optimize for Google. But now, you know, if you look in the context of actual search engine optimization, that's kind of what people want to do with ASO, the App Store Optimization. But it's about Amazon. People want to rank number one in Amazon. People want to rank number one in YouTube, in iTunes, in the App Store. And that's like true search engine optimization. That's how I think about it.
A lot of platforms have their own search facility. Yeah, like you said, YouTube, mm-hmm. iTunes. Even one of the interesting things I've been digging around with on my own site is the on-site search box. I remember Ezra was talking about when he gets e-commerce store, someone who's using the search box tends to buy more often. Most of the sales were coming from people who did a search on site because they knew what they were looking for. And it prompted me to always have a very prominent search box on site. And I pay a lot of attention to what people are searching for, because it gives clues as to how I can make my site more usable to help people find what they're looking for faster. And they're also literally delivering me the keywords that are topical for my audience. So it's a lot of cool stuff you can do around that.
Note, go put a search form back on my website.
I recommend you test it out at least. Yeah. Check out the results. But as I'm moving more products and services onto one of my sites, superfastbusiness.com is now the house for a membership community, website development, search engine optimization, or traffic services, as we're now sort of calling it,
right?
Because I think that's a broader sense of what we're doing. We have publisher packs. We have even our marketplace has moved across there. It's really important that we help people find what they're looking for in their minimum steps. I think like all good advertising and conversions, you want to have the same simple conversation from start to finish. Like, let people have a seamless flow from wherever you find them to wherever you'd like them to get to, whether it's on-site or off-site, right?
Yeah. Love it.
Let's talk about content native advertising, because that's something that you've been getting pretty popular for talking about. And I think that that is something that our audience really needs to know more about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something that I'm completely geeking out about lately. I mean, this is what's fun for me. And it's really cool that it's becoming so popular this year. I started doing it probably about a year and a half ago when I kind of gave up on Google SEO. You know, I mean, so we do content marketing, and everybody, if you have a blog, you want more traffic. And so that's why we focus so much on SEO and Google, is we want more traffic. Well, I said, well, I mean, if I could just get the traffic cheap enough and just drive it myself, I wouldn't have to care about Google. I wouldn't have to wait. It's not that I don't care about Google, but I just wouldn't have to wait for Google to bless me with their magical powers. I could just get traffic all day and as much as I wanted. So I started experimenting little by little. And now it's this whole big thing, and they're calling it native advertising, which really just means that your ads blend in with the content around it. It's not like banner ads that are intrusive or that are interruptive. It's meant to either actually be a piece of content or look like a piece of content. And right now it's getting really, really high CTRs and good ROI. So it's a wonderful thing.
So it's kind of like the can of Coke in a product placement for a movie.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It doesn't look like it was an advertisement, but that spot was paid for.
Right. So give us some examples on how we can put this to use.
So there's different levels of it. You know, really, technically, guest posting, a guest blog post on someone else's blog is kind of native advertising, except you don't have to pay for it. Well, there's actually a form of native advertising now where, you know, you can get paid placement. You can have your article on BuzzFeed.com or any of the, you know, Viral Novas or these other really hot websites that are out there, Mashable. You can pay to play now, and that's one form. And then there's another form of advertising inside the Facebook news stream. You know, the Facebook users, they know of the ads are over there on the right-hand side. Not all of the users understand that those suggested posts are actually sponsored posts. And so that's another form of, and when I make a newsfeed ad, I do everything I can to make it not look like an ad. So many people, they put their products in there and they put their, you know, discount for the next 24 hours only. Like, that's such a giveaway. You're in the world's greatest real estate right now. I believe the newsfeed is. You're in the world's greatest news real estate, and you're blowing your cover by making your ad look like an ad instead of a piece of content. And so that's what I do. I don't want to get rambly.
Well, some of the greatest direct response copywriters always said you should disguise your advertisement as news.
Yeah.
And we've seen this in print newspapers. Some of the full-page advertisements in the weekend paper here read like a news story, especially about markets like weight loss or even collectible toy cars. You wouldn't realize that it's not a newspaper article unless you see that little advertisement disclaimer on the top of the ad, which I guess is very similar to how Facebook have their little sort of note to explain to someone what this part of the page is.
Yeah, any direct response marketer who's ever done magazine advertising knows that an advertorial inside a magazine is usually the best performing ad you can use. It looks like a piece of content inside the magazine. So, and this stuff's been being done for, I don't know exactly the time, but probably almost 100 years. So it's nothing new. It's just new to the internet. And it is no surprise that it's taking off so well.
Okay, so you've mentioned a couple of websites and you've also mentioned Facebook. Where else can we use this strategy?
Well, actually, in my super fast business presentation, I'm going to be talking about a case study of how I'm doing this with Twitter, because a lot of people don't know, but Twitter has an advertising platform that's very competitive to Facebook. I mean, with their targeting options and their geo-targeting options and what you can do. So I'll be talking a lot about how I'm using that right now. And that's kind of the latest thing I've been working on, is using Twitter with this. But I use it a lot with Facebook. A couple other websites that you can use is Taboola, and that's Taboola.com. There's also Outbrain.com. They're really hard to get into. You have to have a really good piece of content, and they really don't want to smell any, you know, marketing on it. They really just want you paying to advertise content, and then hopefully you will get something out of that. Taboola, they, you know, they don't care as much. They care that you're paying your bill, you're not doing anything illegal or hateful, and it is a piece of content, and it can be pretty aggressive in the marketing. You know, I'm doing it with YouTube ads. You know, I'm paying to sponsor my YouTube ads inside of other people's YouTube. So there's that first 5 seconds when you watch a YouTube ad. Well, you can have your content show up there. You can have it show up in the sidebars and the newsfeed. So there's a lot of different places to do this.
Right. And how do you track the results of these? Just out of curiosity, because I imagine you're going to most of these platforms and you're taking out advertisement. Some of them might give you a tracking pixel. Some of them mm-hmm. might not. Do you have a simple process for this?
Yeah. So, you know, I'll give you the simplest version and probably the one I've done the most and it's become the most successful is just from the Facebook news feed to a blog post. And that blog post has a call to action to something at the end of it. And so with Facebook, you have conversion codes, you know, built right into Facebook. That's just a standard part of Facebook advertising. So I put my conversion codes on the thank you page and just to, you know, really get specific. For me, it's a blog post about, are you making these mistakes with your Facebook ads? And then, you know, it talks about the mistakes, it talks about what you should do, and then it has a call to action to find out more about my coaching program, which is an application. And then on successful completion of the application, it fires that conversion code. So what I'm able to do, that's one thing why I love it so much. It's like such a Swiss Army knife of traffic. One, because I'm using my fan page for the ad, I'm getting likes naturally just because they're seeing my ad in there and people that have never been introduced to my fan page are seeing this fan page. They like the content that I'm sharing, so they click like. They want more posts like this. And then they click on the ad because they want to read the article. It looks interesting. They want to know if they are making these Facebook mistakes. So they click the ad. Now they're introduced to my blog. So I'm getting blog subscribers out of it. On my blog, I have options for them to opt in and become a part of my newsletter and get my free mini course. And so I'm getting leads off of it. And then I'm also getting actual, like the purpose of it is to get coaching clients. So I am able to track how many people are filling out my application form for my coaching program. And then I can back that data out to find out, okay, well, I know for right now that every lead I get on there is worth at least $35. Well, I'm getting those leads between $6 and $8. So it's very profitable for me.
Nice. That's a great way. So obviously, we should always be including a way to track our campaigns. Do you have the same ability to do this on other platforms?
Yes. You know, I'll tell you that, you know, like I said, Twitter has a very competitive, I really think they're trying to take on Facebook. They've got conversion codes. Other networks have conversion codes. And if a network doesn't have conversion codes, you can always use another service. One that I really like to use is Improvely. You can use Google Analytics if you really know how to get into that with goals and stuff like that. But Improvely will give you a conversion code. And you put that on all of your pages, and then you tell it a goal. Like if somebody reaches this page, then count that as a sale or a lead or whatever, and you can attach a value to it. And then they give you a tracking link. So it watches only people that have clicked this tracking link and have made it to that goal page. And if they do make it to that goal page, then a conversion is tracked. And if you added the value of that conversion, it's tracking the money value for you as well. So you can track your earnings, your costs, your clicks, your leads, your conversions, all that good stuff.
Wow. Yeah. So it's very important to track. And that's a great tool you've mentioned. I've been using Google Analytics, but I'm sure that this is sounds like it does what programs like Axroy used to do way back when they were very effective before they stopped working.
Yeah, it's got the whole you know, you'll understand there's the UTM codes and yep. all that, so you can do all that advanced tracking in there, and the code that they give you is JavaScript, very similar to Google Analytics, but they've also thought about what the direct response marketer wants, so they have those extra features, and I feel like it makes it a little bit easier, better. Google Analytics is awesome, but it's sometimes it can be really intimidating and overwhelming and hard to understand.
What do you think some of the common mistakes are? You did mention you have a report. It'd be interesting, I think, to cover a couple of them.
Common mistakes with?
With advertising in general. Like when you take on a client and you've seen some of the things they've been trying to do, are there things that you always spot that you think, okay, you've got a problem here?
Okay, so the biggest thing that I see people doing wrong is they're just making these crazy ads, and I get it, because when we first start advertising, we want clicks. We're like desperate for clicks when we start our first couple of campaigns, but we got to remember that it's not about getting a lot of clicks. It's about getting a lot of customers. That's actually something I was taught by Brad Fallon. He taught me that, and so. You know, putting the red borders on the ads, these crazy pictures that some people are coming up with, like they will get you a lot of attention and clicks, but it's usually from somebody who's just curious about this crazy thing that's on their fan page or, you know, on their Facebook page, and it's not buyers. So, you know, what you really want to do is you want to think about, you know, you want to put yourself in the viewer's shoes. And you want to create an ad for them. It's a lot like fishing. You don't want to just use some kind of shiny bait. You want to use a bait that's like the fish is like, oh my gosh, that's the filet mignon. Like, I want that thing. And so I try to make my ads, you know, the image for one is the most important part of the ad on Facebook and with a lot of these platforms. And so the image needs to be something that they instantly recognize. For example, in the tennis market, a tennis ball or a tennis racket, basketball, a basketball, you know, bloggers, they understand that RSS icon. So, you know, what image do they really relate to? And that lets them identify with the ad. So that's a big thing to do. And then the other thing is you don't want to make the ad so, you don't want to make it blind. Like, curiosity is powerful in getting a click, but you also want to have the benefit in there, because if it's just curiosity, you're going to get a lot of clicks that are not qualified. But if you can balance curiosity with benefit, so for example, if you were advertising a muscle building pill, instead of just saying like, here's a clever way to get, you know, here's how to look strong, you know, or, you know, how this guy got stronger. It's hard to come up with ad copy on the fly here. But, you know, you would want to, I think one of our lines was how an average guy gained 15 to 20 pounds of lean, hard muscle. So that's curiosity in a story. They want to know how this average guy, I'm an average guy. I resonate with the average guy message. And then the benefit is 15 to 20 pounds of lean, hard muscle. So that's what you really need to do with your ads is tell a story, get that curiosity, make it look like content, but also have that strong benefit in there so that when they get to the offer page, they actually want it, because that was the reason why they clicked it. You know, the 15 to 20 pound gain. Well, that's why you want this pill, because this pill gives you the 15 to 20 pound gain. Am I making sense here, James?
Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm basically, you're saying that most people attracting people with the wrong kind of bait, and they're getting the fish they don't want.
Yes, and you know, for a lot of these networks, you know, the more clicks you get, the cheaper your clicks are, you know, because it's all about this algorithm of CTR and all this geeky science stuff. But you know, at the end of the day, it's not about decreasing your costs; it's about increasing your earnings. And if you increase your earnings, the costs will take care of themselves.
Gotcha. And it's really just tracking that. Can you invest $1 and get more than a dollar back somewhere in your funnel in a reasonable time frame?
Right, right. And the end game is being able to spend more money than all of your competitors, not being able to spend less money than your competitors.
And that seemed to be the big takeaway from Ryan Ellis talking about his eye contact business that he sold for a substantial amount, somewhere around $170 million. He said he worked out the value of his customers and then was able to spend a good chunk of it, I think around a third of the lifetime value, on acquiring that customer. And he was able to scale past his competitors.
Absolutely.
That's why guys like you will always be in demand, Justin, with your advertising now. Tell me, you've got some sort of passion ideas that you've been tossing around, and one of them was to do with a video sales letter phenom. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm always trying to think of, you know, they always say like these big billionaires and stuff out there that they like thought of something ahead of everybody else, you know, 5, 10 years ahead. So I'm always trying to think of like, what is that thing that I can think of? How can I get ahead? What does it look like? And it's really hard to do. It's really hard to like try and predict the future and think of, because people will call you crazy. But I've had this idea lately that I really think is going to be successful, and people have been really resonating with it and liking the idea. So to give a little context to it, you know, we started selling online from these old fashioned direct mail guys who actually printed out sales letters and sent them out to people, and people would buy off of it. And then the internet came along and they said, okay, well, let's try and just smack one of these things on the web and see if it still works. And so they created those really long scroll for 2 minutes sales letters, long form sales letters online, and they worked. And then a guy, John Benson, came along and he said, well, let's turn this long sales letter into a video, and we'll just, you know, literally put the words on the screen, we'll read them out loud, and it'll gauge them on two different senses. And so we had video sales letters, and that worked even better than the written sales letters. And then webinars, and now webinars is really hot and it's working really well. So I was thinking, you know, what's after that? What's going to be the next evolution of this? And I believe that it's going to be interactive VSLs. That's what I'm calling it. Somebody else might come up with a cooler name, but interactive VSLs. And to me, what that means is, if you think about a face-to-face sales presentation, like how real selling is done, there's a salesman and there's a prospect, and the prospect is talking, and a good salesman is reading the body language and also listening to the feedback that the prospect is saying. And in real time, this sales pitch is dynamically changing all the time based on the feedback and the volley of, you know, words back and forth. It's constantly changing. But when we look at the sales, how it is currently online, it's linear, you know, it's static. It doesn't change. Every person has to go through the same pitch. It's like a salesman walking up to somebody in the store, grabbing them by the arm and giving them like a uniform sales pitch that they've given to every single other person. And you have to sit through it. That's no fun. Well, interactive VSLs, would you leverage the technology that's out today so that you'd be able to, let's say, for instance, you have a 90-second video that shows up and you're introducing the topic and then you ask a question. And there's three options for the question. Based on the answer that they choose, A, B, or C, they will see a different video behind that. And that's where it really gets crazy. You know, that's the dynamic, and that's how you customize the pitch to the person's preferences. And you could get crazy with this. I mean, you could have all kinds of different scenarios and a whole tree of, you know, maybe 15, 30 different small videos all connected. Or you could make it pretty simple and maybe you just have three different sales letters or three different videos based on those first three questions. So, you know, that's kind of it. You could have a really simple version, or you could get nutso with it, or you could do something in the middle. But the point is, it will be interactive, it will be dynamic, it will be customized. And that's kind of what the internet is really moving to, right? It's really moving to everyone being able to customize their radio stations, customize what books they see. Netflix customizes what movies you see in your queue. And I believe that that's the future of online sales.
Yeah. And just like I believe that John Benson didn't invent the video sales letter, this is already happening. I have clients who do this right now.
Oh, really?
For large corporations, they've shot a number of videos. They might have 10 different videos for the same part of the sequence, and they'll show the right person and the right location for that customer. And you can pretty much run it as a choose your own adventure. You can have a start video, and then they can click on the next option that suits them, and it takes them through a different tree all the way through to a customized experience. And they're doing that in large hotel groups. My friend who's doing this is called Nat, and I believe that I've also done this as well with separate paths that people can take. It's not dissimilar to the way that I have a choose your own adventure products page on superfastbusiness.com. And it comes about when you realize, as you said, that no two people, unless you're really fishing from the same pond with the same bait, and you know, if you really just want the same fish over and over again, if you want to appeal to all the different fish, you're going to have to present the right path for them to go through the funnel. And it totally makes sense. I think it's being done right now, And I know for a fact there was video sales letters being done a long time ago in the first format, but I'm not sure how people managed to claim the first of many things that have been out there well and truly before that. I think it relies on ignorance of people not knowing.
Yeah, I think he claims the first ugly VSL is his claim. I know that me and Jason Moffat did a video. We didn't know to call it a VSL or anything, but we did one in 2008. It was a video pitch for a $5,000 program. And
well, I know fact I was using them in 2006.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure John Reese was using them before that.
Yeah, right. He was around before anybody.
That's right. And I remember when I was watching Traffic Secrets, he had already been doing it for a long time.
Mm.
So it's definitely going that way. And where I think it will be really interesting is where the screen can detect our facial reactions to a sales pitch and modifying the video. And, you know, I'm thinking that it has to go beyond a clunky the user having to put information. I think it'll transcend that to where it can just adapt. And then we're now sort of talking about artificial intelligence, where it can detect based on your tonality or your reactions as to if it's on off
where your eye gaze is going to.
Just like a human salesperson is sensitive to far more than the words. They're looking at the prospect's body language. Are they about to depart? Do they sound stressed in their tonality? Are they a bit nervous? You know, these are the subtle things I learned from selling on the floor for a good decade or more.
I can just hear the people's heads exploding right now as you mentioned all that.
And I don't necessarily think it's a good thing that we would have computers, but I do suggest people look at the movie Her for an indication as to where this stuff can go.
Mm, yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that yet, but it's...
I've seen the previews. I haven't seen the actual movie, so I know what you're talking about. And
yeah, it's very interesting. For now, though, I guess the simplest way to implement that is to make multiple versions of each segment of your video and then let people move their way through the adventure that suits them perfectly. And I think, you know, to some extent, people like Mike Geary have been doing a good job with that, where they say, you know, click here if you're a man, click here if you're a woman sort of segmentation.
Yeah.
At the very minimum, at the early parts of the funnel to start moving people into the category that's going to be the most relevant for them.
Yeah, I definitely think that there are some people kind of touching on this in what I think are like Jurassic formats of it. And, yeah, you know, soon that they will, when they really understand everything that HTML5 and CSS3 and, you know, all this new technology that's out there, when they really understand and when Fios speed internet is more popular, it's really going to get nuts because so much more is going to be possible than just like a form where they click a button. You know, there's going to be all kinds of interactivities with your mouse and video and time delays and all that stuff.
And at the very minimum, what we can do right now is we can be sure to segment our customer list to make sure that we are adding appropriate tags and labels so that we're only ever presenting information that's highly relevant, that gets the most amount of resonance, that does convert, that gets you a good return on your investment. And for that reason, I think it's been a wonderful discussion. We've talked about content native advertising. We've talked about some of the mistakes people are making in terms of how they're writing their ads and who they're attracting. And we've talked about where we can see it going. And I'm sure this will probably spark some imagination. But if you're just doing a house list with a general blast and you're writing ads for no specific character, then you probably can implement a lot from this discussion as a checklist. And also, I think we've really reinforced the fact that you have to track and measure. You've got to know where your investment's going in terms of outcomes. Now, Justin, it's pretty customary on this show to ask for an action step and maybe a big sort of takeaway. If there was one thing you'd really like to impress upon our listener for this episode, what would you like to share? What do you think is really important that people totally get and take action on?
I think the biggest thing for people to really understand is that the future of online marketing is really going to revolve around customization, segmentation. It's no longer can you just mass blast people with the same message. It's happening in email marketing. It's happening on landing pages. We just talked about it. It's possibly going to start happening in videos. If you want to get ahead of the curve, if you want to have an advantage over other people, start doing this now because it's the really, really early spark of when people are doing this. And you'll be light years ahead, and you'll start to see your ROI get bigger. You'll start to see your conversions get bigger, and it'll just help you overall make more people happy because you won't be giving everyone the same line. And that, you know, think about the 98% of people that are leaving your sales page. You know, how do they feel? You know, I think you could really improve upon that.
Yeah. And actually, that just reminded me why. With the advent of remarketing, we don't have to be slamming people into a squeeze page anymore because of the ability for us to track that individual and be able to follow them up a little bit later on. So we can try multiple paths now.
Yeah, it's 2014. Lots of things available to us.
Thanks so much for coming on, Justin. I am really glad that you were able to share this stuff. Thanks also for putting that Twitter stuff into your presentation from Superfast Business Live. That's very generous. And I look forward to our next opportunity to catch up.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me on.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.